Ki jai. Their Divine Lordship, Shishi Rukmini Dorkadish, Ki jai. Their Divine Lordship, Shishi Jagannath Baladev Shimate Subhadra, Ki jai. Their Divine Lordship, Shishi Gornitai, Ki jai. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam, Ki jai. Transcendental Book Distribution, Ki jai. Harinam Sankirtan Jagi, Ki jai. Transcendental Prasadam Distribution, Ki jai. Gaur Premananda, Hari Hari Bo. All glories to all the Sema devotees, Hare Krishna. All glories to all the Sema devotees, Hare Krishna. All glories to all the Sema devotees, Hare Krishna. All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the third canto, chapter 7, Further Inquiries by Vidura. We're on text number 10. And today's topic will be Atma Viparyaya. And this is what the problem is Atma Viparyaya, is that we are upset about our self-identification. Or it also means the foolish understanding that one is the body. And because of that, it causes connections and separations among different bodies. And this doesn't stop. It continues life after life. So we just, in this particular canto, where we finished Vidura's inquiries about the Ishvara and the Jivas. That was from text 1 to 7. And then he inquired how the pure soul can be engaged in nescience. And how does the soul suffer in spite of the Lord's presence in the heart? And then now, in verses 8 to 14, Maitreya dispels those misconceptions. And he recommends bhakti. So today's text, 10, is about misidentification. And that's the distress is due to that alone. So we'll go into that. And then as the rest of this section goes on, in text 11, he uses a nice analogy of the moon reflected on water. It appears to tremble, but actually the moon doesn't appear to tremble. And then in text 12 to 14, he gives a solution, which is bhakti. So we'll go to our verse today, text number 10. Yad artena vinamusha. Yad artena vinamusha. Pumsa atma viparyaya. Pumsa atma viparyaya. Pratiyata upadrashtu. Pratiyata upadrashtu. Swasirash chedanarikaha. Swasiras chedanarikaha. Yadartena vinamusha. Pumsa atma viparyaya. Pratiyata apadrashtu. Swasiras chedanarikaha. Yadartena vinamusha. Pumsa atma viparyaya. Pratiyata upadrashtu. Swasiras chiranadika. Yadartena vinamusha. Pumsa atma viparyaya. Pratiyata upadrashtu. Swasiras Chiranarikaha. Sasirashchiranarikaha Yaratena vinamusha Pumsatma viparyaya Pratiyatarupadrastu Sasirashchiranarikaha Yaratena vinamusha Satma Viparyaha Tata Bhagavadasya Vaishnavis Yadatena Vinamusha Satma Viparyaya Pratiyata Upadrastu Sasirashchiranarikaha Yadartena Vinamusha Pumsatma Viparyayaha Pratiyata Upadrastu Sasirashchiranarikaha Yat, thus, artena, a purpose or meaning, vina, without, amushya, of such a one, pumsaha, of the living entity, atmaviparyaya, upset about self-identification, Pratiyate, so appear. Upadrashtu, of the superficial onlooker. Swasiraha, own head. Chedana arikaha, cutting off. Oh, what happened here? Let's see. I guess somehow or another I deleted the translation. Sorry about that. So, do you want to repeat the translation? Thank you. Purport. A teacher in school once threatened his pupil that he would cut off the pupil's head and hang it on the wall so that the child could see how his head has been cut off. The child became frightened and stopped his mischief. Similarly, the miseries of the pure soul and the disruption of his self-identification are managed by the external energy of the Lord, which controls those mischievous living entities who want to go against the will of the Lord. Actually, there is no bondage or misery for the living entity, nor does he ever lose his pure knowledge. In his pure consciousness, when he thinks a little seriously about his position, he can understand that he is eternally subordinate to the mercy of the Supreme, and that his attempt to become one with the Supreme Lord is a false illusion. Life after life, the living entity falsely tries to lord it over material nature and become the lord of the material world. But there is no tangible result. At last, when frustrated, he gives up his material activities and tries to become one with the Lord and speculate with much jugglery of words, but without success. These activities are performed under the dictation of the illusory energy. The experience is compared to the experience of one's having his head cut off in a dream. The man whose head has been cut off also sees that his head has been cut off. If a person's head is severed, he loses his power to see. Therefore, if a man sees that his head has been cut off, it means that he thinks like that in hallucination. Similarly, a living entity is eternally subordinate to the Supreme Lord, and he has this knowledge with him. But artificially, he thinks that he is God himself, and that although he is God, he has lost his knowledge due to Maya. This conception has no meaning, just as there is no meaning to seeing one's head being cut off. This is the process by which knowledge is covered. And because this artificial rebellious condition of the living entity gives him all troubles, it is to be understood that he should also take to his normal life as a devotee of the Lord and be relieved from the misconceptions of being God. The so-called liberation of thinking oneself God is that last reaction of avidya by which the living entity is entrapped. The conclusion is that a living entity deprived of eternal transcendental service to the Lord becomes illusioned in many ways. Even in his conditional life, he is the eternal servant of the Lord. His servitude under the spell of the illusory Maya is also a manifestation of his eternal condition of service. Because he has rebelled against the service of the Lord, he is therefore put in the service of Maya. He is still serving, but in a perverted manner. When he wants to get out of service under material bondage, he next desires to become one with the Lord. This is another illusion. The best course, therefore, is to surrender unto the Lord and thus get rid of the illusory Maya for good, as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 7:14. Daivihi esha gunamai mama maya duratyaya mam eva ye prapajante mayam etam tadanti te. Jai. Om Gyana Timanandasya Gyananjana Savakaya Chakshusunitamina Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Upakadamayam Tadati Swapadantikam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasari Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So, Archita Prabhu, can you read the translation again? Jai, thank you. So, this is a very interesting verse. And this verse is one of the verses that helps defeat the argument of the origin of the jiva. How we actually retain our spiritual identity, even though it appears not to exist at present, because we're falsely identifying with the body. Although we're eternal, we're always existing in three phases of time, past, present, and future. The soul, the individual soul, doesn't know this truth about himself. And therefore, this is that word, Atma Viparyaya, that he indicates that he's forgotten his true identity. So what happens is the spirit soul misidentifies with the body. And this means that the actual spiritual body is still there. It's not destroyed by time, you know, just like other living entities, even the demigods, their bodies, their soul is not destroyed. So in this sense, the conditioned soul is not fallen, although has forgotten his spiritual form, his relationship with Krishna. So, oops, sorry about that. Can you see that still? Let's see what happened here. Okay. So, according to Sanatana Dharma, we saw the picture there of the actual soul. It's an image from the Atma magazine. So, according to this Sanatana Dharma, we can actually directly observe and understand both the Supreme Person and the Atmas by taking advantage of our natural sensory faculties of the Atma. So this is what the Sanatana Dharma provides, the basis for a true science of consciousness. And it deals with the full potentialities of the Atma, and it goes way beyond the mechanistic thinking. So the Atma, it can actually achieve higher states of activity and participate in a direct relationship with the Supreme Person. So this is what it means. This is a sentient and personal relationship we have. So these are the faculties that we have. And this is what Sanatana Dharma teaches us, is the actual nature of consciousness. It can be understood by the Atma. That's who you are, the soul. So this is a level of conscious activity. So remember, we showed this slide last class I gave, how it doesn't matter what kind of brain one has, because simply if you transfer your consciousness from material consciousness to Krishna consciousness, your life becomes successful. So it doesn't matter what the brain substance is in a particular body. It's the consciousness of the soul that works intelligently. And this is the whole movement to Krishna consciousness, is to purify that consciousness. And then we become successful. But in this particular verse, we learn, but we don't want to lose our head. See, it doesn't matter what kind of brain you have, but you don't want to lose your head by behaving irrational, like activities that have no meaning. Or like Daksha lost his head by becoming offensive. You see. Or we lose our head by losing control of the situation, all the different situations we're in. Or we succumb to influences of bodily desires. This is how you could lose your head. Or we could lose our head in reactivity, so much noise, so much social media, TV, our inbox of other people's agendas. And what to speak of having adi-daivik miseries that we get from this material world, thinking that we're the body, the material energy. We have to deal with adi-bodhic miseries from each other. It's said that the highest paid in billions of dollars are engineers to try to figure out how to steal our attention with distractions, so that we could become like a 15-second byproduct, a consumption byproduct. And this is why the whole thing about social media. They're paying billions of dollars to people to steal away your attention and to distract you. Just think, like, if you have 1 hour per day in distraction, that's 30 hours a month. And if you go 2 hours a day in distraction, that's 60 hours a month. That's like a week per month. And then 12 weeks per year, that's like 3 months in distraction. So they say that, so that's only 2 hours, but they say the average American watches 4 hours of television every day. That's 28 hours per week. That's like a full-time job. And over a lifetime, you lose a decade of your life. And you might say, oh, that's only 10 years, you know. I might live to be 100 years, but yeah, maybe. But what does Prahlad Maharaj say about that? He instructs his demoniac schoolmates in the seventh canto. Say you live for 100 years. You may not live 100 years, say, you know, but we're just saying that. And he says 50 years is gone in sleeping if you sleep 12 hours a night. And 20 years is gone in childhood, sporting and playing. And then you have 20 years is gone in old age, family adjustments, thinking about things you didn't do. So that's 90 years. And we just talked about the remaining 10 years. It's gone in distractions. So Prahlad Maharaj says, if we're trained up in our childhood about the science of Krishna consciousness or God consciousness, because we have to do it when we're younger, otherwise it's very difficult to take up this consciousness in old age. So he recommends that Kumara Acharet Pragno Dharmam Bhagavat Iha. So that's what Prahlad Maharaj recommends. So there's a nice verse from that seventh canto, what Prahlad Maharaj said. He said, one who is sufficiently intelligent should use the human form of body from the very beginning of life. In other words, from the tender age of childhood, to practice the activities of devotional service, giving up all other engagements. The human body is most rarely achieved, and although temporary like other bodies, it is meaningful because in human life, one can perform devotional service. Even a slight amount of sincere devotional service can give one complete perfection. So in the purport there, Prabhupada mentions how in the schools and colleges, universities, at home, all the children and the youth should be taught to hear about Krishna. So they should hear the instructions of Bhagavad Gita and put them into practice. And thus they'll become strong in devotional service and free from fear of being degraded to the animal form of life. So this Bhagavad Dharma we're talking about is extremely easy in the age of Kali. Simply by Harinama, Harinama, Harinama Kevalam, Kolo Nasteva, Nasteva, Nasteva Gatir Anyata. You only need to chant the Hare Krishna mantra and you'll be completely cleansed from the core of your heart and will be able to be saved from this cycle of birth and death. So, just think about it. If you're grateful for life, just say, if you're grateful for your life, say, if someone say, I'm grateful for my life, so then that means that you care about time management, right? How you utilize your time. It's so valuable. And it begins with a day of intention instead of a day of distraction. That's why we have our morning routine, we have our discipline, and we have practical examples of that, you know, that we see here, that we follow. And then one more verse, Prahlad Maharaj says, what person too attached to household life due to being unable to control his senses can liberate himself? An attached householder is bound very strongly by ropes of affection for his family, wife, children, and other relatives. So that's what this word we talked about, how misidentification, we start to get attachments to other bodies and other things in the mature world. Of course, we know in Krishna consciousness, if we become attached to devotees, then it's different. So imagine life is like a game in which you're juggling, you know, all these different balls in the air. Work, family, health, friends, you know, so many different things. We're trying to keep all of these in the air. But this Prabhupada mentions in a purport in the second canto, he said, this whole material creation is just a jugglery of names only. He said, it's nothing but bewildering creation of matter like earth, water, and fire. The buildings, furniture, cars, bungalows, mills, factories, industries, peace, war, or even the highest perfection of material science, namely atomic energy and electronics, are all simply bewildering names of material elements with their concomitant reactions to the three modes of material nature. So they're simply no more significant than the babbles of sea waves. So that's described there. So here's another showing how if we just a second of human life is wasted in vain research for planning for happiness in the mature world, we can never be replaced, even if one spends millions of coins of gold. So this is the babbling of just the names going out. This is the world that's made up of babbling. Prabhupada says, the civilization which aims at this utmost perfection never indulges in creating unwanted things. And such a perfect civilization prepares men only to accept the bare necessities of life or to follow the principles of the best use of a bad bargain. Our material bodies and our lives in that connection are bad bargains because the living entity is actually spirit, and spiritual advancement of the living entity is absolutely necessary. And Prabhupada talks about this so-called advancement of civilization, the materialistic advancement of civilization, is called the civilization of demons, which ultimately ends in just wars and scarcity. So as transcendentalists, we're warned to be fixed in our mind so that even if there's difficult in our plain living and high thinking, we won't budge an inch from our stark determination. Prabhupada mentions that in that purport to that verse. So if we go to the first canto, and this is the chapter where Narada Muni appears to Vyasadeva and enlightens him. And after that, there's a couple verses there in the 7th chapter, 5th verse and 6th verse. They're actually like the essence of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And here he understands, he sees. He says, due to this external energy, the living entity, although transcendental to the three modes of material nature, thinks of himself as a product, a material product, and thus undergoes the reactions of material miseries. And Prabhupada says in the purport there that that's the root of suffering by the materialistic living being. It's pointed out by Vyasadeva, but he also gives the remedial measures which are we have to take up. And so this is what we have to understand, that he says here, the living entity misunderstands himself to be a material product. This means that the present perverted way of thinking, feeling, and willing under material conditions is not natural for him. But he has his normal way of thinking, feeling, and willing. The living being in his original state is not without thinking, willing, and feeling power. That's what we described earlier about the Atma. It has this thinking, feeling, and willing power, and it has a relationship with the Supreme Person. So there's an analogy that's used that sometimes the king will visit the prison, right? And he personally goes there and pleads for the reformation of them. So similarly, Krishna descends in his kingdom of the illusory energy, and he personally gives relief in the form of the Bhagavad Gita. And he personally suggests that we should overcome this illusory energy and just surrender. Surrender to him. So this is how we're actually being reclaimed in two ways: by the process of punishment or by the Lord himself or the spiritual master that comes within and without. So this is what Vyasadeva saw. He saw the diseased condition of the souls. He saw the cause of the disease. And then he sees the remedial measure, which is in the next verse. Verse 6. The material miseries of the living entity, which are superfluous to him, can be directly mitigated by the linking process of devotional service. But the mass of people do not know this, and therefore the learned Vyasadeva compiled this Vedic literature, which is in relation to the Supreme Truth. So this is how we revive our dormant affection for love of God. It's not a mechanical system of just hearing and chanting, but it actually solely and wholly depends on the causeless mercy of Krishna. And if he's satisfied with our sincere devotional service, he may endow us with loving devotional service to him. But if we perform the prescribed hearing and chanting, then he may at once mitigate our unwanted miseries. So in the next verse, actually, he says here, simply by giving oral reception to this Vedic literature, the feeling for loving devotional service to Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, sprouts up at once to extinguish the fire of lamentation, illusion, and fearfulness. So this is the importance of hearing and chanting, you know, to perfect our life. And then we'll get attached to these messages of Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and then the symptoms of our material disease will disappear. So because there's no difference between the Supreme Lord and his sound vibration or these Vedic literatures. So the conclusion is that simply by hearing about the transcendental Lord through the Srimad Bhagavatam, through the Bhagavad Gita, we can perfect our life and get free from these material miseries. So if we go to the 10th canto, in the 4th chapter there, the atrocities of King Kamsa, we know in that chapter where he was grabbing the child of Devaki, and she was begging, you know, to please, you know, just bless me with this one child. You killed all my other children. Just please, you know, just give me the gift of this. So we know Kamsa was going to grab the child and was going to just smash it against the stone. And what happened is that Yogamaya, which is the younger sister of Lord Vishnu, slipped upward from Kamsa's hands and she appeared in the sky. And she had these arms, eight arms and weapons you could see there. She was decorated with flower garlands and valuable jewels, and there were siddhas and apsaras around her, you know, they were worshiping her and giving her all kinds of presentations. And this is what she said. Oh Kamsa, you fool, what will be the use of killing me? The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has been your enemy from the very beginning and who will certainly kill you, has already taken birth somewhere else. Therefore, do not unnecessarily kill other children. So this really woke him up, and he became very philosophical, and he began to introspect. And he approaches, you know, his sister, and he says, this is what he says. In this world, we can see that pots, dolls, and other products of the earth appear, break, and then disappear, mixing with the earth. Similarly, the bodies of all conditioned living entities are annihilated. But the living entity, like the earth itself, are unchanging and never annihilated. So here we see Kamsa as a demon. Although he's a demon, he had good knowledge of Atmatattva. And Prabhupada says that actually he's better than the modern politicians and diplomats of today. So that's what happened there. So anyway, so it goes on to say here that this word Atma Vipraha is used in this particular verse, that the foolish understanding that one is the body. So this is what he says. One who does not understand the constitutional position of the body and the soul, Atma, becomes too attached to the body conception of life. Consequently, because of attachment to the body and its byproducts, he feels affected by union with and separation from his family, society, and nation. As long as this continues, one continues his material life. Otherwise, one would be liberated. You see? So this is what Dharma means, is that we have to engage in the service of the Lord, and then we'll be liberated. And if you do that, even in the material world, you're using your body and your mind, you're considered to be liberated, even though you're in the material world. So this is the response that Devaki gave to Kamsa. O great personality Kamsa, only by the influence of ignorance does one accept the material body and bodily ego. What you have said about this philosophy is correct. Persons in the bodily conception of life lack in self-realization, differentiate in terms of this is mine and this belongs to another. Persons with the vision of differentiation are imbued with the material qualities, lamentation, jubilation, fear, envy, greed, illusion, and madness. They are influenced by the immediate cause, which they are busy counteracting because they have no knowledge of the remote supreme cause, the supreme personality of Godhead. So that's there described. And then if you go to the 12th canto, again, this is brought up. And Srila Vishnava Chakravarti Thakur, he has given an elaborate summary of the Srimad Bhagavatam in the commentaries to his verses in this chapter. This is the fifth chapter of the 12th canto. And this is when Sukadev is enlightening Parikshit Maharaj. And he's using this analogy that we're having today. He says, in a dream, one could see his own head being cut off and thus understand that his actual self is standing apart from the dream experience. Similarly, while awake, one can see that his body is a product of the five material elements. Therefore, it is to be understood that the actual self, the soul, is distinct from the body it observes and is unborn and immortal. So then he keeps on going and says, when a pot is broken, the portion of the sky within the pot remains as the elemental sky, just as before. In the same way, when the gross and subtle bodies die, the living entity within resumes his spiritual identity. The material bodies, qualities, and activities of the spirit soul are created by the material mind. That mind is itself created by the illusory potency of the Supreme Lord, and thus the soul assumes material existence. So it goes on and describes many different ways here how, even though the snake bird bit him, King Parikshit was completely unaware of what happened. He became completely, you know, in samadhi and introspective about, you know, meditating on Krishna. And then Prabhupada ends the purport today with this verse. Daivihi esha gunamai mama maya duratyaya mameva ye prabhajante mayama tarantite. This divine energy of mind, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is difficult to overcome, but those who have surrendered to me can easily cross beyond it. So these gunas are like ropes we see here. And they're a rope is some, you have different strands and you weave them together and they become very, very strong. So this material energy is very strong to overcome. But if we surrender to Krishna, then we can actually get out of this false temporary illusion and surrender to Krishna. So this is our process here. And this is the last slide here. In the next verse, we'll see an example of the moon. It's an analogy that it reflects on water and appears to the seer to tremble due to being associated with the quality of water. So the self associated with matter appears to be qualified as matter. So there's many places it describes this, how we have to become introspective and we have to try to see how this material world, it's just a culture of jugglers, juggling forbidden fruit, unwanted things all around us. But we may think we're immune, but actually there's a verse it says here, those who think, it's not a verse, but it's a kind of a phrase that came up with Chaitanya Charan. Those who think they aren't prone to evil are the most prone to evil. This is, again, losing your head. And we may end up doing things that we would normally find obnoxious. So again, you lose your head, you see. So to be a leader, we have to ask our questions. to listen, learn, and realize that we don't know everything, but we can actually inquire and find out these things. Because the external situation, it can help us produce more introspection. We can discover a greater number of internal truths and appreciations. Just like an example, you see an attractive person, you can think, instead of being attracted to them bodily, I can see how this person, who created this beautiful person, just think how beautiful that person should be. And then we become attracted to that. So this is what we should be. Instead of extravagant, we should become introspective. Become very grave like the sea and dive into the nectar instead of remaining on the surface where it's so much distraction, so much misery, so many things like that. We could go deep and just realize that there's many aquatics there that are just enjoying the nectar of the ocean of nectar of Krishna consciousness. So this is what we want to do. And there's a nice verse I'd like to end with here. This is from the prayers of the personified Vedas. Therefore, O Master of the three worlds, the wise get rid of all misery by diving deep into the nectarian ocean of topics about you, which washes away all the contamination of the universe. Then what to speak of those who, having by spiritual strength rid their minds of bad habits and free themselves from time, are able to worship your true nature? O Supreme One, finding within it uninterrupted bliss. So I'd like to end there. And if anyone has any comments, questions, or realizations. Jai. Okay, well, thank you very much for your kind attention. All glories to Srimad Bhagavatam, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.